Hello, and welcome to the Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I am your guest host, coming to you from a burning planet, a planet threatened with extinction from a war between the two biggest nuclear powers on Earth, coming to you from a country that where there has been a growing fascist movement for the past 7 years, centered in the Republican Party, now overtaken and consolidated itself in command of the Republican Party and the Supreme Court, and from a country where there is not the kind of movement among the decent people, the thinking people, the people who care about the planet and oppressed people here and around the world for a real revolution, which is the only solution to this madness and which is so urgently needed. So this is what we get into here on the Michael Slate Show, and this is what we're going to dive deeply into today. This show is about understanding the world, and it's about changing the world. Because humanity retains the power to reverse and overcome the dangerous dynamics at work. And we'll talk about that. The irreconcilable splits in the U.S. ruling class. The very bad direction that this is headed towards now and accelerating towards now. But also the opportunity, in fact, the rare opportunity that this situation creates for the people to make a real revolution and end the long nightmare that humanity has faced, but only if people shake themselves out of their stupor and get serious. And we intend to bring you today the kind of understanding and the leadership that can make this possible. Because none of this, no change for the better, no revolution, no emancipatory struggle, and certainly no emancipated world can be achieved without serious, scientific, far-sighted leadership and direction. And this is what the RevComs, the Revolutionary Communists, and Bob Avakian, the leader of the RevComs and the author of The New Communism, are fighting to provide right now in this crucial situation. So we'll be hearing several segments from the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on youtube.com/TheRevComs every Thursday night. And we're going to begin with Andy Z, the host of the RNL show, digging into the need to identify and seize on this opportunity to build the movement now for an actual revolution, which has been brought on, this opportunity brought on by these deepening contradictions of the system in the ruling class and throughout society. So that's where we'll start our show. Then we'll move into the question of Tommy Tuberville, who is, yes, a racist redneck, but his actions around the U.S. military, which we'll get into, are extremely significant in their own right and also illuminate the deep divisions within the U.S. ruling class. So Annie Day will speak about Senator Tuberville and what he's been doing to block military appointments in the service of opposing abortion rights, LGBTQ rights, dragging the clock backwards and ensuring that the U.S. military be, in his words, quote, a strong, hard-nosed killing machine. And this segment from Annie Day will be followed by a little further discussion between Annie and Andy Z about the U.S. military and why it matters that these divisions are reaching into the armed forces. Then Andy will introduce a segment from Bob Avakian speaking about the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America, the radically new set of laws, set of description of the culture, education system, economic foundation, and the way that a new society, a revolutionary society, would relate to the rest of the world, relate to the planet itself, and create the conditions for people to exercise their most fundamental right of all, a right that can never be exercised under this system, which is the right to determine together, collectively, the future direction of society and of humanity as a whole in the service and towards the ends of emancipating all of humanity. And as you'll hear in this introduction, you can watch all three parts of the Bob Avakian interviews that this excerpt is taken from right now at the YouTube show, youtube.com/TheRevComs. All three parts are up there. I encourage you to go and find them. Then Andy and I will talk a little bit about a major declaration published recently called We Need and We Demand a Whole New Way to Live, a Fundamentally Different System. And with that, as the arc of today's show, let's dive right in with Andy Z on this moment, the opportunities for revolution amidst all this madness.
On July 4th, 2023, the RevComs, that's us, the Revolutionary Communists, dramatically announced to the world the declaration titled We Need and We Demand a Whole New Way to Live, a Fundamentally Different System. This announcement was made with revolutionary fervor, determination, and purpose in front of the birthplace of the United States, Constitution Hall in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In the face of this historic building, where the founding, establishing, and guiding document of this country, where the U.S. Constitution was written in secrecy by slave owners, by merchants and burgeoning capitalists, revolutionaries, the RevComs, revolutionary communists and supporters, stood up with daring and revolutionary passion to call for the long overdue abolition of the U.S. Constitution, the abolition of the capitalist imperialist system that this outmoded Constitution exists to regulate, the abolition of all the institutions that enforce this system that preys on the people here and around the world. For way too long, the U.S. Constitution has been considered sacrosanct, untouchable, sacred, even to those who criticize what this country has done to them and to others. We RevComs did not come to just speak the truth of America's history in genocide, slavery, exploitation, and oppression, a history of military invasions, coups, atom bombs, and climate destruction, and a scale of mass incarceration unprecedented in world history, as important as it was to do so on July 4th. We didn't come to only call for the abolition of the system and rule that makes daily life for the millions in this country a sea of hopelessness and despair and suffering, for billions around the world a living hell, as essential as all that is for the survival of humanity. Oh, we came here with a way out of the madness of all these outrageous and unnecessary horrors through revolution. And we came with a roadmap, a strategy, a guide to preparing for and then to make a real revolution. Without the strategy, the roadmap, and the leadership for revolution, there will be no revolution. To bring that is extraordinary. But declaring all of that is not all that we announced to the world in Philadelphia. We came with a declaration that says, in the name of the people and in the name of humanity, we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. This is a demand that the new socialist republic in North America, with its sweeping vision, with its foundation in a radically new economic and political system, this constitution would usher in a society and ultimately a world free from all forms of slavery, all exploitation based on class, race, sex, and gender. All relations in which one part of humanity is subordinate to another. And last week we began with this rendition of the declaration that I am speaking of.
We need and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. In the name of the people, the billions in this country and throughout the world who are treated as less than human, enslaved, exploited, oppressed, terrorized, brutalized and murdered by the police, and slaughtered by the armed forces of this system we are now forced to live under. The system of capitalism imperialism. In the name of humanity, the billions in all parts of the world who are denied a decent life and a future worth living in, or any future at all. Threatened with literal extinction because of the destruction of the environment by this system and the danger of nuclear war between the U.S. and its rivals in Russia and China, all of them ruthless imperialist powers. We can no longer afford to allow these imperialists to continue to dominate the world and determine the destiny of humanity. It is a scientific fact that humanity does not have to live this way. A whole different way of living is possible. A whole different way to organize society with a radically different economic foundation and political system. Emancipating relations among people and an uplifting culture. All of this oriented to meeting the basic needs in fulfilling the highest interests of the masses of people. With the urgency the situation requires, we declare and demand the existing capitalist imperialist system and institutions of government in this country must be abolished and dismantled and replaced by a new socialist system based on the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America.
This demand for a new socialist republic in North America will not be handed to us. It will be won through a revolution involving millions to overthrow the system we live under and replace it with a new, radically different system. To build up to the point where millions know of the revolution, know of the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America, and where they are organized and raising the demand and fighting for this new society requires work. Working to make this known and struggling hard with masses to get out of all the ways of thinking that accepts this putrid world the way it is today. That work begins now. Making this declaration, and we are the RevComs, the proclamation we introduced here on May 1st, known far and wide. With Bob Avakian, B.A., the revolutionary leader and author of the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic, known. With the RevComs becoming a force that represents the way out of an intensifying precariousness, with shocking jolts upending the lives that masses of people have become accustomed to. Work that begins now so that this Constitution is seen as the alternative to the outmoded and oppressive U.S. Constitution. Work so that this becomes the mass demand of millions. If you're thinking that that cannot happen, that is not true. There's a brand new piece by Bob Avakian on RevCom.us, the title of which is this: Revolution, Major Turning Points and Rare Opportunities. Or, Why Did Lenin Talk About World War I as a Stage Manager of Revolution? And why did Mao say we should thank Japan for invading China? Bob Avakian draws on the history of the two great communist-led revolutions of the 20th century to show how there are times when the possibility of revolution opens up. He writes, quote, "Revolutions do not proceed in a straight line, and it is crucial to grasp and ask decisively in relation to those rare times when a profound qualitative change in the situation opens up the possibility for a major advance for revolution, perhaps even the possibility of carrying things all the way to the overthrow of the existing system and the establishment of a radically different and much better system. This possibility may not be, and generally is not, immediately apparent. And on the contrary, what is often more readily seen on the surface is the way in which, in the short term, the situation is worsening. The point is that all this can only be correctly grasped and acted on with a consistently scientific method and approach. One of the most important things that such a scientific method and approach makes clear is this: revolutions are made possible in the most fundamental sense as a result of the intensification of the contradictions of the oppressive system, leading to crucial turning points, providing rare opportunities for major revolutionary advance, and even potentially opening the way for the victory of the revolution." End quote. Look, this intensification is all around us every day. Abortion overturned, affirmative action overturned, deadly heat and floods causing massive migrations. Trump and DeSantis both calling for military action in Mexico against drug cartels.
"And it's now time for America to wage war on the cartels."
While calling for even harsher treatment of immigrants and refugees, a harsher treatment, not by the way, that the Democrats are already carrying out. And speaking of the Democrats, Biden is ratcheting up the Ukraine war, planning to send internationally outlawed cluster bombs, and we're going to have a segment on that later in today's RNL show. The intensification of these contradictions of the oppressive system we live under is leading to crucial turning points, but they will not by themselves result in a revolution. It is not just the people getting hit with outrage after outrage that will mean that they will suddenly say, oh, the RevComs have been right all along. Let's get with them. No. The intensification of the contradictions of this oppressive system and in the ruling class itself open up the possibility of revolution. Babavakin goes on to say in this same piece, quote, the prospects for revolution hinge to a great extent on whether the conscious forces for this revolution not only carry out consistent revolutionary work and struggle, but more specifically, whether they recognize and on that basis act boldly and with scientifically grounded determination to take full advantage of these crucial turning points and these all too rare opportunities. Over the past 2 years, we have brought to the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show through crucial writings from Babavakin how we are living in such a time with society such that we are really living now in two countries with one border, with the ruling class divided in a way they have not been since the Civil War in the 1860s. And as it says in that proclamation, we are the RevComs. Quote, this country is being ripped apart with one section moving toward an outright fascist form of rule, with the other fighting for the horrific way things have been. They cannot resolve these deep divisions and hold the country together on the basis of the normal way this system has operated. And in any case, that normal way is full of oppression, destruction, and the real danger of wiping out humanity. End quote. The specter of civil war is never far from the headlines, and the divide deepens as the contradictions of the system become more acute. This is erupting in a sharp divide over funding their military and what its character should be. The U.S. armed forces are the foundation of how the rulers of this country enforce their dominance within the world imperialist system. The fascist Republican Party is withholding funding and refusing to approve the highest military commanders of the armed forces, and they want to wipe out any hint of diversity in the U.S. military, and they are attempting to make it impossible in the military to get an abortion. This divide over funding and the essential character of the U.S. military, an institution that is decisive to the U.S. imperialist plunder and domination of the world, is very important to get into in some depth. Annie Day, a regular contributor to the RNL show, is going to get into this right now. So listen to what she has to say.
Let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I am your guest host. That was Andy Z from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show. Now we're going to hear from Annie Day on Tommy Tuberville. And that'll be followed by a quick discussion between Annie and Andy, who you just heard from.
The U.S. war machine is in the middle of a major retooling to contend for world domination against their strategic rival, China. At the same time as they're aggressively waging a proxy war with Russia and Ukraine, funneling huge amounts of military equipment, training, and intelligence to defeat their imperialist rival, Russia. At any moment, this could spin out into direct military confrontation that holds the danger of nuclear annihilation. At this volatile moment, the fight at the top of this system over on what basis their fighting force will be forged is bringing its normal functioning to a halt. 2 points. One, the fascist from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, a football coach turned senator straight off the Southern plantation, has single-handedly blocked hundreds of promotions for high-ranking generals and admirals in all parts of the U.S. military, including the top generals who serve on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the group of military generals that advise the president. He's done so in protest of a new Pentagon policy that would give women in the military time off and reimbursement to travel to get an abortion. And this is especially necessary for women on military bases in states where abortion is illegal. Right now, hundreds of top generals are considered acting until they get approval from the Senate Armed Services Committee, which they can't because Tuberville is preventing this. A retired Marine colonel said, when you're acting, you cannot give fundamental strategic guidance to the institution. You are a placeholder. So right now, this includes the current top commander of the U.S. Marines and will soon include staff chiefs of the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. Two, A larger core of fascists in Congress are threatening not to approve the annual defense authorization bill, which sets the U.S. military budget and policy. And they, too, are demanding an end to this abortion policy, as well as the military's diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Last year, Tuberville said it outright. When asked whether white nationalists, that is, open white supremacist fascists, should serve in the military, Tuberville answered,
"Do you believe they should allow white nationalists in the military?"
"Well, they call them that. I call them Americans."
The Democrats and the mainstream imperialists are fighting for the U.S. to maintain its position as the top capitalist imperialist power in the world. And they aim to do so with a cover of inclusion and diversity. At a time of record low recruitment, how else will they get more and more women and black and brown people to loyally serve their empire and maintain its vicious lie that America is a force for freedom and democracy in the world? But the fascists feel that this will tear their empire apart. They are moving rapidly to cohere the U.S. on a Christian theocratic foundation, reinforcing open white supremacy and patriarchy. And they feel the attempt to diversify their predominantly white officer corps, allow women in the military the basic right to control their bodies, or to purge open white supremacists from the military ranks will weaken their ability to be what Tuberville calls a strong, hard-nosed killing machine. This fight is actively threatening the stability of their empire and opening up the possibility for revolution if the forces for this revolution are built up now. As the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian says in his new article, Revolution: Major Turning Points and Rare Opportunities, if and when conflicts among different sections of the ruling class reach the point where they are beginning to assume antagonistic proportions themselves, that is a sign of extremely deep and acute cracks and fissures in the entire established order. And such a situation must be seized by the oppressed, not to side with one section of the bourgeoisie against another, thus helping the ruling class to repair the rupturing old order and reinforce its dictatorship in one form or another, but instead to rise in revolutionary struggle to overthrow the rule of the bourgeoisie altogether.
Annie, thanks. That was a really sharp, well put. And it's a critical point where you ended from Bob Avakian, that to fight for a radically new and emancipating society, we must not help the ruling class to repair the rupturing old order and reinforce its dictatorship in one form or another. Instead, we have to rise in revolutionary struggle to overthrow the rule of the bourgeoisie. He wrote that decades ago. It's so important. Look, as you said, what's revealed by the terms of this sharp divide over the military funding and promotion is not over military matters and funding, you know, what's going to go, how much money is going to which branch of service or munitions, but over two completely opposed visions of what should cohere this country and its imperialist military. A relevant point here also was that one exception in the Supreme Court decision on affirmative action.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very heavy thing. And basically what happened is that the Supreme Court, in overturning the right to affirmative action in all the you know, colleges and universities across the country, had the one exception of the military service academies. And you can tell from that there's a section of the bourgeoisie, at least the majority of the Supreme Court, but also very much beyond that, that is very worried about having a predominantly white officer corps that is leading and giving direct orders to a military force that is almost half black and Latino.
You know, one of the Democratic senators who was objecting to this opposition said, quote, "We have recruitment challenges. We cannot exclude large groups of people from the process. This is about national security," end quote. Look, the memory of their army coming apart in Vietnam, of people rebelling against the army, is not very far from this senator's mind or from a section of the ruling class. I think the other section of the ruling class knows this, but they're saying, so what? They're going to have to get used to it. It's a return, as we've said many times, to the Confederacy with these fascist Republicans. And look, I just want to say this to be absolutely clear to our audience. In no way are we advocating or advising how to keep the U.S. Imperial Army become better. No, 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 no. As you brought out, we are making the point to grasp that the divide in the ruling class over something so integral to the murderous enforcement of their empire is a very big tell of a moment when an opening for the oppressed to rise in revolutionary struggle that must be seized. So I want to thank you again for doing this. I want to give a strong urging to all of you watching to get into We Are the RevComs and dig into something that's deeper, that gets into the heart of this rare time and the opportunity for revolution. The talk by Babavakian, Something Terrible or Something Truly Emancipating, which is the roadmap to seize this rare time for revolution.
That was Annie Day and Andy Z. Speaking about Tommy Tuberville, the U.S. military, and the interests of humanity.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
In today's show, we're going to hear two important segments about how we get out of this mess. First, we're going to hear from Bob Avakian talking about the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America that he authored that can be implemented as soon as we bring the current system and its Constitution down through a real revolution. And that'll be followed by myself speaking with Andy Z on the recently published declaration, We Need and We Demand a Whole New Way to Live, a Fundamentally Different System.
All right. I want to welcome back the co-host of the RNL show, Sansara Taylor.
All right. So we last fall had the extraordinary opportunity to interview Bob Avakian on this show up close and personal. Over the course of several days, we did three major interviews with him, which are featured at the top of our channel. And the first one, which we urge everybody to watch if you haven't yet, or to go back and rewatch, actually to watch all three. But in the first interview, you really get to know a lot about Bob Avakian, his life, his development, and about the revolution. And a lot of you just get invited into this entire project of human emancipation. The second interview, we ask him, and he goes very deeply into the strategy for making this revolution and many of the critical questions and that he's learned and worked on over decades as a revolutionary leader. And then in the third interview, he takes us into the future. What this revolution could make possible, what the future society would be like, and quite a bit more. And so this is something we're going to draw from today. We're going to share a significant excerpt of that third interview where we ask him about the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America that he authored. And I think it'd be helpful if you want to say a few things about that before we play it.
Well, yeah, just to set this up, first off, all three interviews are worth watching. I mean, and it's that arc you described is very important, you know, because it's the full, it's a 360 view of the leader, his character. We say it's the heart and soul and the hardcore for revolution. You get a sense of that. And, you know, it's even pays to take a day, and we're going to hopefully do something here in Los Angeles where people come and watch the whole thing in over a day and talk about it and get a sense of all of those dimensions you spoke of. This third interview is very important because it is what we're fighting for. And the first thing that you ask him is, you ask, well, why do we need state power? Why should we crave state power? And then I ask a provocative question around democracy and dictatorship. And you got to see that to get the answer. I'm not giving it away right now. And the third question then, which we're going to play now, is on the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America, which is, you know, a big subject of this declaration and demand. And we'll come back to that later on. I think we should play that second, that third answer right now, and then we'll take it from there.
You've mentioned, and it's come up a number of times already, the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America that you authored. And we wanted to ask, first of all, it's an amazing document, and there's never been anything like this before, especially at all, but especially before the seizure of power. Why did you feel it was important to write it? And is there anything that you had in mind, any particular problems or questions you had in mind when you were writing it that you would suggest for people who are newly reading it that they also think about as they're reading it, or people returning to it?
Well, you know, I just did it because I didn't have anything else to do. No, I mean, look, you know, there's a need for people to have a clear sense, a concrete sense, as well as a, you know, a lofty vision of what it is we're aiming for. You know, sometimes the critics say, oh, you know, you're always complaining about what you don't like. You don't like this, you don't like that, you don't like it, but you never can say what you're for. Well, you know, here it is concretized what we're for. I mean, first of all, even before this Constitution was written, we were very clear what we were for in broad strokes and in, you know, in basic terms. But I felt there was a need, you know, coming off of summing up a lot of experience of previous, you know, socialist society in China and the Soviet Union before it, before, you know, the revolutions there were overturned and capitalism was restored in the Soviet Union in the 1950s and in China in the 1970s. In summing up this, I felt there was a need to make another leap in terms of what's, you know, the, you know, we're talking about socialist state power. What socialist state power and the socialist society that it was, you know, bringing the basis for and reinforcing, what should that society actually look like in as living a way as possible so that people could get a concrete sense? And also so we'd have a guideline. You know, what do you do after you make a revolution? What do you do on day one, people often raise? Well, this is a, you know, look, in the actual event of a successful revolution, there'll be a lot of new questions that'll get thrown up. Some things may turn out to be different than the way they're, you know, in some particulars of that Constitution. But it does lay out the basic principles and a lot of very concrete guidelines and institutional, you know, procedures and institutional or you know, organizations that could actually guide people on how to begin the day after seizing power, so to speak, and actually transforming society in a way that would be emancipating. So that was, you know, why I recognized the need for that. And I did have certain questions in mind. I did a lot of study of, you know, I've been wrestling with this question for several years, like, what should be the character? You know, we can learn from China, we can learn from the Soviet Union, but we can also see certain shortcomings. What should be the character of the actual system, of the actual state power, of the actual institutions, from the political, governmental institutions to the culture, to the educational system, and so on? What should be their actual character? What can we learn from past experience? Where can we see that things need to be done differently and better? So that was a sort of a general concern. I did, you know, I did a lot of reading. I studied, you know, I looked into the constitutions of the Soviet Union, particularly from the 1930s. I went back and looked at the Chinese constitutions during the Cultural Revolution in the 60s and 70s. I went and I read the Magna Carta. I read the, you know, the rights of the French document, the Rights of Man. You know, I read the U.S. Constitution again to, you know, to try to get a sense of the contradictions that they were dealing with, even though that was a different system, as well as the constitutions that were actually socialist constitutions. And there is, as I point out in the book, The New Communism, there is one, you know, essential and basic contradiction that I felt was important to speak to and to lay the basis for dealing with in a somewhat different way than it had been done in the history of socialist societies previously. And that is the contradiction that we can scientifically determine that communism, the achievement of communism, and the revolution that's necessary for that is objectively in the interest of the broad masses of people of the world, the overwhelming majority of humanity. But, and we can learn this from the experience of previous socialist societies, at any given time, not everybody in whose interest that revolution is wanted at any given time. And yet, that's one problem. And yet, at the same time, it would be absolutely criminal to make a revolution and then hand power back to the people you just overthrew and let them subject the masses of people to all the horrors that you just made a revolution to do away with. And besides that sort of obvious thing, there's also the question that, you know, at a given point, what if a significant section of the masses has become, you know, disoriented, you know, has felt that the revolution is not really doing what they wanted to do and so on, and they're sort of open to being persuaded, you know, in some subtle or even overt ways to go back to the old system. And then you have the problem, okay, it took us however many decades to actually overthrow the system. Now we're going to just let people, you know, take us back to the old system and we have to start all over again. No. So how do you handle this contradiction that this is in the objective interest of the masses of people, but not all of them want it at any given time? Well, you cannot handle this correctly, and it's not going to lead to a good result if you, in effect, put guns in the backs of the masses and try to force march them to communism because, quote unquote, it's in your interests. So what this Constitution is doing is providing the institutionalized means where, yes, if, say, 90% of the people wanted to go back to capitalism, they could, through the institutions of this system and in its electoral processes, actually effect that. But it would take an overwhelming majority of people to do that. Meanwhile, the institutional basis provides the means for continuing on the road of socialism without having to put guns at the back of the masses, including those who become disaffected temporarily. You know, it's like a hangover. You know, masses of people get swayed. We want to go back to capitalism. And then they wake up and they say, man, I got a f***ing hangover. I forgot what this f***ing capitalism was like. What the f*** was I thinking of, you know? So this is a way of, like, not having that determine things. So that the way the electoral processes are set up, you know, it does serve to reinforce the existing system while allowing the masses to have a lot of sway in determining who their leader, a lot of voice in terms of who their actual leaders are. And it even allows for the possibility that people could vote to go back to capitalism if there were an overwhelming majority. But it provides institutional means so that people don't suffer from that kind of hangover. So that, but on the other hand, you're not force marching them to communism with guns at their back. So they, you know, they're, you know, some of these anarchists and others say, well, you know, this is all a sham. You know, you, to use the old saying, you giveth with one hand and taketh away with the other. You know, you pretend, you let the people vote, but you stack the voting so it goes the way you want it to. Well, yes. I mean, the point is that there is no, as long as you have a society divided into different classes, into, you know, oppressive social relations that you're still striving to overcome, there's no such thing as pure democracy. You know, they always talk about free and fair elections. They called the election in Iraq when they were occupying the country with their own military a free and fair election. But even when you're not, don't have guns at your back, or the, you know, the police aren't coming to your door and dragging you out and telling you how to vote, you're being influenced by all the institutions of society and by the underlying operation of the economic system and the prevailing social relations. You're being influenced that the only reasonable thing to do is to vote to reinforce the system. That's what happens under capitalism when people go vote. You know, it even gets to ridiculous dimensions. I saw, you know, that, well, anyway, Bill Maher, I saw him on TV, you know, I was going to say that, but, you know, he has one or two points, but he's mainly just really, you know, having a bad influence. And he's trying to convince people that Mike Pence is not so bad because the alternative is Donald Trump. And he goes into this whole thing about, when you take an SAT test, at least when I took it, they used to ask you a question. They say, choose the best option out of this set of questions. And then he used that to say, you see, the way these reformists always talk, we can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. Therefore, we have to choose the least bad alternative. Well, Pence may be this and that. He's a Christian fundamentalist, blah, blah, blah. But he's not trying to pull off a coup. And, you know, he's trying to use the mechanisms of the system to institute a fascist theocracy, okay? And Bill Maher, talk about a poverty of imagination and the lowered sights and limits of what you see as possible, that you're posing to people the choice between Donald Trump and Mike Pence. But the fact is, there's a certain logic to what Bill Maher is saying there. You got to work within the reality of the system as it is. You got to make the choices. Yeah, okay, you know, you could vote for some radical, but it's not going to get any votes. It's not going to mean anything. You're just going to take votes away from the good Democrat, or maybe from Mike Pence. But this is, you know, this is what happens under this system. There's no such thing as a free and fair election, you know, in the sense of being free of the influence of the dominant relations and institutions in the society. And yes, in this Constitution, that's also true. But at the same time, in order to avoid this whole thing of you know, force marching to people to communism with guns at their back, it is institutionalizing the means for a tremendous amount of dissent, like I said, cultural, intellectual ferment, so the masses can thrash out a lot of questions without losing the whole thing and then waking up the day after and say, what the f*** were we doing? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, think of everything, all the reasons why people tell us this revolution will never happen. Are they pointing at nothing real? Of course not. They're pointing at very real things. The power of this system in terms of its armed force and its power in terms of molding people's thinking. You know, so, you know, it's very, very difficult to actually make a revolution. That's why people say to us, it'll never happen. It's too much going against it. It's too powerful. Too many people are f***ed up. People are not thinking that way. The middle class is too big, and so on and so forth. Well, all that's real, and all that has to be overcome. And imagine you overcome all that, and then you encounter problems with building a new economy. You encounter problems in working out the, you know, the non-oppressive relations among different sections of the people, and people become disaffected, and they forgot what it was like being under capitalism, and they want to temporarily go back, and then a week later they say, could you revolutionaries please come around again and start organizing us to get back to the other system we had, which we forgot was much better? So this is why it's institutionalized, that there are processes for people to actually choose their leaders to a very significant extent, but within a definite framework. And there are institutionalized means and provisions and encouragement of and for dissent and cultural and intellectual ferment, but within a certain framework, just as democracy is practiced within a certain framework, a very different framework within this society and this system. I would say the central problem, that a historical problem of the communist revolution that it's speaking to and providing the institutional means to deal with, is this contradiction that this revolution and advance to communism in the world is in the fundamental interest of the masses of people, but not all the people want it all the time. But you can't solve that by force marching people to, you know, on that row with guns at their back. So this is the institutional means for resolving that contradiction in a way that doesn't require you or force you to do that, but actually corresponds to what are the fundamental interests of the masses of people, which is why they would have risen up under your leadership to make a revolution in the first place.
That was Bob Avakian, a third interview that Sansara and I did with him this past fall. We've been speaking about the Constitution in terms of this, in relation to the Declaration, we need and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. And it says in there that this is a Constitution that will politically empower the masses of people in order to carry out the revolutionary transformation of society and to contribute to this process in the world as a whole. And it's really just incredible what he gets into there. And when you ask him what is different here, what was he thinking about, and identifying this contradiction between the fact that overcoming all forms of oppression and exploitation is, which is what communism means, is objectively needed by the vast majority of humanity. But the road to that, even in the new society, at different times, not everybody wants to go there or sees the pathway to it. And how do you deal with that? And he talks about how this Constitution solves that through its principles, its operating principles, and its institutions. And it allows for the space for people to breathe and be in opposition as we work our way towards that communist future. It's quite incredible. There's not ever been another document like this. And so it really repays for people to, one, listen to that answer again and listen to that whole third interview, but also go to and read the Constitution and read The New Communism, where he goes into some of this thinking behind it. But at the same time, since began the show, and a big part of our mission now is bringing this demand for this Constitution to the fore and spreading it all throughout society. And in this declaration, we bring out this whole other way we could be living, and the way that this new Constitution for a new socialist republic would be enabling the creation of a fundamentally different system.
Yeah, I think it is. First of all, I want to echo exactly what you said. People, you have to watch these interviews. You have to watch them in their entirety and dig into this Constitution. It's so concrete, it's so rich, and it's so visionary. But at the same time, we do have this new declaration. We need and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. And this is a declaration that we are spreading across society, that you need to get into and you need to be part of spreading to let people know what becomes possible with the seizure of state power and the establishment of this new Constitution. And there are six kind of headlines within this that describe what this revolutionary state power, what this new Constitution makes possible. And I want to read them. And they're gone into more fully if you read the full statement, but I'm going to read the distilled headlines of them: a whole new dimension of freedom and rights of the people. And here I'll elaborate just a little bit, where it says the role of government and institutions established with this new socialist constitution, including the police and military, will no longer be to contain, control, repress, brutalize, murder, and slaughter people here and around the world. And I'm going to skip ahead. It says, as set forth in this Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America, the people in this new society will not only be allowed, but encouraged and enabled to fully speak their minds politically, to express themselves freely through artistic and other means, to dissent and protest with constitutional and institutionalized protection of their right to do so. So this is a whole new dimension of freedom and rights of the people. It also goes into a whole different economy to meet fundamental needs and serve highest interests. Eliminating discrimination, inequality, oppression in every form. Education to actually educate and empower the masses of people. Healthcare to serve the people. And finally, abolishing nuclear weapons. Finally, abolishing war and systematically addressing the environmental crises. So each of these is elaborated more fully in this new proclamation and gone into much more deeply in the Constitution itself. But none of these things are possible within the system that we live under today, capitalism, imperialism. None of them are possible under the U.S. Constitution. And the U.S. Constitution doesn't even make claims to deal with these fundamental rights in this kind of way or this dimension of freedom, but they are possible with an actual revolution. And this demand needs to be spread and taken up now.
And these demands are not just aspirational. They're actually worked out quite concretely. This is a concrete blueprint for a new society. So for example, even restoring the environment and having an ecologically sustainable future is written into how the economy has to function. And we could go into each of these provisions, the six you mentioned and many more. And when you get into the Constitution, these are realizable, but not under this system, mm-hmm. as you said, and not under the U.S. Constitution. And so this needs to be known, as I said at the top of the show, by millions of people now. It needs to get in front of a lot of people. And then What's immediately urgent is for those people who right now feel that what is the world today is intolerable and want to know how we can get out of this madness. You need to get into this "We Need and We Demand a Whole New Way to Live a Fundamentally Different System" and find out about the Constitution. And we need to debate this. And you need to take up that proclamation, "We are the RevComs," that goes into the strategy for how we do this, the things that we are determined to do, and the importance of fighting the power and transforming the people for revolution, and the ferocious struggle to get people to see what is actually possible and get out of thinking all you can do is snipe at somebody else, get your little piece of the turf, hustle for one block or another block. We have a whole world that we could possibly win, Sansara, in this time when things are coming to a head, as I spoke to at the beginning of today's show.
Yeah, and when you talk about people need to stop thinking the way the system has trained them to think, the going along with this, I just have to say one more time, I know you went after the U.S. Constitution some in your opening, but so many people, decent people, who hate what they see happening, the attack on affirmative action, the ripping away of abortion rights, different atrocities and assaults on the people and their basic rights, are desperately clinging to the U.S. Constitution and hoping it will be like a talisman to keep this horror at bay. And actually, that document enforces the very system that has given rise to these horrors. And people who hate those things need to take up the demands in this "We Need and We Demand a Fundamentally Different Way to Live" as the foundation and the framework from which we are fighting against their future and fighting for this revolution. So I just, this has to be right up against that right now.
And one place to start, in addition to getting into this and helping it spread, is to watch this show every week. I'm serious about that. Watch this show and comment below and raise your questions. We are working here to expose the nature of this system, how all the things that people abhor in this system come from the system itself and how they come from the system itself. What's happening? You don't hear anything like this anywhere else on the internet. Sure. Even those who might have a fairly thorough critique do not know the way out of the madness, do not see the possibility of revolution, do not see what a new society would be like, do not know about this Constitution, and do not know about the development of this, of communism that has been made by Bob Avakian, a society that's not about the first shall be last and the last shall be first, but about a society that emancipates all of humanity, a society and a movement that we have today and where we're going in the future that's not about revenge of getting mine and I've been oppressed, so now it's my turn. This is a very different vision of human emancipation.
You just heard two pieces. Bob Avakian, the architect of the new communism, speaking on the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America that he authored, taken from the Bob Avakian interviews that are available in full at youtube.com/therevcoms. And then you heard me in conversation with Andy Z talking about "We Need and We Demand a Whole New Way to Live, a Fundamentally Different System," which is available at revcom.us. It's a major new declaration. This brings us to the end of today's Michael Slate Show. I want to thank you for tuning in, spending any part of this hour with me. I want to point you again, if you're interested and want to learn more of what you heard from today, there's incredible resources at revcom.us, the website, or youtube.com/therevcoms, the RNL show. I want to thank Henry, the assistant producer for the show. I want to give my love to Michael Slate, as always, the main host and the originator of this show, and a fighter for a real revolution. And with that, I want to remind you as I sign off that the problem is not human nature. It is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. I'll talk to you next week.
planet of slums. Todos somos ilegales. Todos somos ilegales.
Look at fire once, our time has come.
Todos somos ilegales.
Fighting for a new way and a new day.
Todos somos ilegales.
Mírame a los ojos para que leas mi acento. Prohibido como la droga, ilegal como un nazi en una sinagoga. Contraindicado, clandestino, lo identificable lo contamino. Más de 600 millones de personas gritando luz verde para invadir Arizona. No necesito diplomas, lo que aprendí lo viví y lo almaceno en mis neuronas. Las experiencias son mis talleres, la vida es un estudio desde que se nace hasta que se muere. Así crucé para el norte buscando buena vida, componente vacío de materia consumida. Dejé a mi abuela sola pa' besarle el culo a Ronald McDonald y tomar Coca-Cola.
Todos somos ilegales. Todos somos ilegales.
Look at fire once, our time has come.
Todos somos ilegales.
Fighting for a new way and a new day.
Todos somos ilegales. Todos somos ilegales. Todos somos ilegales.
Put the fire once, our time has come.
Todos somos ilegales.